Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by these great companies that are giving us money to let you listen to their stuff.
Bullshit, Kyle. We make this show. We make this show. You and me. Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by us.
Someone's got to pay the bills, Dan, because it's not our trading.
All right, roll them.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
We haven't even made it through the introduction.
Right. Wrong with it.
All right, folks! You've made it to the China Shop's big September blowout bash month in review. We are joined today by myself, Shopkeeper Dan, creator of financialineptitude.com. Kyle, how are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing good. Well, I mean, as good as I can be.
As good as you can be.
I am in timeout, so that should tell you something.
Yeah. I saw it go down on the Discord server. I know all about it.
Yeah. Hate it when that happens.
We are also joined, none other than the creator of TradePro Academy.com, George Big Papa Papazov. How are you doing today, George?
Hey, Dan. Hey, Kyle. How are you guys doing? Happy to be on again.
Glad to have you.
Excited.
Oh, glad to have you back. Of course, we knew you had to come back because you might be able to dish something out today.
Oh, ooh, I've thought about it and I know what I'm going to do.
Oh, no. Because I had a suggestion for you, but we'll get to that.
And in a big, stupendous, amazing, outrageous moment, we are also joined by the options extraordinaire Vic himself from TradePro Academy. How are you doing today, Vico?
I'm doing great. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me back.
Are we allowed to have more than two guests?
Maybe.
If they're great.
I've been on this podcast for the past, like, what, twice in the past 2 weeks, maybe?
Yeah.
3 weeks?
Yep, pretty much.
You haven't been off the podcast, it seems.
I don't think I have.
Yeah, I created a whole ton of clips of you saying random shit. We just pepper our podcast with it now.
Nice.
That's exactly perfect. Nice and perfect. Just tag that on the end of any joke I make. All right. So, as Kyle alluded to, last month in review, we had George in the shop. We did make a bet. And for some reason, Kyle and I don't know if we were drinking or not. It's very possible.
No, we were just extremely cocky. I think we just really wanted to humiliate George. We tried to go with a random stock. It lost about $3.50. Oh, sure. Went from $24.89 to $21.25. That was SGAI.
Woo!
George went with a smart pick. He took the VIX, which opened September at 16.06 and closed at 23.13.
Wait, hold on. So I beat random? That kind of takes the satisfaction away a little bit.
You beat us.
We used random to pick our stock.
Okay, that feels better.
Yeah.
No matter which way you slice it, George, I still feel like a loser. So you can bask in that.
Yes. It feels so good.
Really, we just couldn't pick anything. We had no idea what to pick. So since random was kicking our ass, we thought we'd just run with it. Yeah.
That is accurate. That is very accurate.
So as the winner of this bet, it is up to you to bestow some consequences on us. I would like to say, though, we are getting ready to do our consequences for losing to the random for the month of September.
Shit.
So
you guys are going to get it twice?
Yeah. So what we're doing for this one is we're doing a hot one style challenge where we're going to eat progressively spicy their hot wings. But we thought, as the winner of our monthly bet, maybe you'd like to come back and host it and ask us questions. Oh. Like, give us charts to analyze as the wings get hotter and then grade us. Make it like a special event.
Didn't Post Malone do something like that where he's having like super hot hot sauces? And he took it like a champ. So I know you guys are going to thrive too.
Oh, God, no. I've been dreading this one. Stupid Jeremy.
I sweat when I eat mild curry.
I like hot stuff, but I don't like extreme.
Can I do my consequences?
Yeah.
Okay, what did you have? Yeah. What did you have?
Okay, well, so because it's a double whammy, I don't want to, you know, nobody likes to get shit on twice. Like, that's just not fair.
Oh, no, it's okay. We don't mind.
I'm going to just add to it and say whatever hot sauce you guys find that's like the extreme hottest, you got to find one even hotter than that. That's like, it'll be the G-Heat hot sauce. Okay.
Good Lord.
So the hottest one's going to be 2 million Scoville.
That's a lot.
Let's go. I like 3 million. Oh. 3 million Scoville. Step it up, boys. Those are rookie numbers.
Oh my God. Wait,
so does it count like if I take the hot sauce and like slowly boil it down to just make it a concentrate? Does that up the Scoville units?
That's pretty much what it's going to be at that point when you get that hot. I don't even know you can measure it at that point.
Liquid pain.
Oh, see, now God. This is going to cost me because I'm going to have to hire somebody on Craigslist to supervise this.
Well, we were planning on recording this one. We're going to do a video stream of it so that way people can see our reactions.
I'm so excited. The sacrifices you guys make on behalf of markets and learning are vast and admirable. Thank you, guys.
Well, this is actually a bucket list for Dan. So I guess two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I can't handle peppers. I'm not a spicy guy, but for some reason, I've always wanted to know what it's like to experience 2 million Scoville or like the hottest pepper in the world.
Dude, it's gonna be immense pain going in and even immenser pain going out.
That's what got me the most worried. I'm most afraid of the next day.
The next day is gonna be like the worst day you've ever experienced.
Okay, it will, but you guys aren't thinking about the benefit.
Can I do story time?
I gotta get this out is what I'll be saying after I eat the peppers. The real benefit is it's going to give me this threshold of pain to where like any food poisoning, any crazy food in the future, I can go, well, at least it wasn't the ghost pepper.
I guess.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Right. But if it does kill you, Kyle, can I have Dan's Colson spot?
I'll be the one that lives. Dan's from Baltimore. I'm at least from Texas.
Yeah, I did Ancestry.com and it came back white.
Yeah, I think it actually said white.
No, this one came back. You're fucking white.
Hey, Vicky, you want to make an options market on this and do a bet on their side bet?
Yeah, I'll market make it.
Oh, what's
derivatives on our bets?
Who's going to win this one? I think the odds are better for Kyle. So I'll take the underdog if you want, Vicky, but I need odds. For a Dan win here for the hot sauce steaks.
For a Dan win? Oh, man. I'll get back to you on the odds, but they're not very favorable.
If you watch the hot ones, some of the guys that don't have the experience or don't eat a lot of hot stuff actually do really well.
They do, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what they don't know. It's a perfect.
And also, there seems to be a hump. I'm looking forward to the euphoria. Basically, when you get high from eating too much hot.
Pain, like your brain's like, this is so much pain. Yeah. Have a bunch of dopamine to deal with it.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. All right.
It's like the runner's high for peppers.
For those just tuning in,
the hot sauce
this is Two Bulls Does Hot Sauce, joined by Trade Pro. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we should probably get into the actual review for the month.
Yes.
I think I would like to start us off, though, with revisiting the shop rules.
Okay.
I think it's time to throw everything out and start fresh because I want to change my priorities.
Yeah.
And I'm going to nominate manage risk as number one.
Yeah.
I feel like that probably should have been the top one all along.
Wait, what was it before that?
I don't remember, but it wasn't that. What happened to our rules? That's how good our rules were, was that we don't even remember them. I know there was like no bandwagon trading. There was a...
Rule number one was double check your orders before you enter them.
Yes, that used to be a big problem for us.
Yeah.
What else do we have? We had log your trades. I think that's still a good one. We can keep that rule.
Mm-hmm. I feel like bandwagon trading doesn't count if you're doing futures.
How do you bandwagon trade on futures?
That's what I'm saying. Like the rule's irrelevant. Okay, like you have enough to jump on the bandwagon. It's called the momentum.
All right. So rule number one should be manage risk, I think. I think everyone could agree with that. Seeing how George's number 1, 3, 5, 7, 10 rule, we're all manage risk also.
I think it's just a good idea. It comes out of necessity, really, for me and probably for most other traders.
I think for everybody. I think, I don't know, that's like the main overriding lesson is you're not profitable because you're making good trades. You're profitable because you're protecting your capital. It's a consequence of managing risk.
Yeah, yeah, if right? I was always right, I wouldn't still be trading 20 years later. You know what I mean?
I'd be done.
I'd be done with this. I'd have all the money in the world.
You put it all on one bet and then you'd be done.
Yeah, exactly. Do something fun, for God's sake.
Right.
Eat hot sauce.
Oh, fuck that.
Go to Bulgaria for a month.
Yeah.
All right. What's rule number two, Dan?
You're asking me like I know.
Oh, see rule number one?
See rule number one?
Remember rule one.
Is that a jab at me for the think or swim fiasco last week?
No, 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 that's at me actually.
Oh, okay.
Remember number one. Any other good rules that we should be keeping in mind? What's something that you've found, George and Vico?
Always clean up after yourself.
That's a good rule. That's probably
further down the list. I think just in general, you mean like trading rules?
As far as trading goals, yeah. Do you have like a hard and fast limit as far as like when you stop trading? Like, okay, I've tried three times. It's not working. The day's over. Anything like that?
Yeah, probably. Like, it depends on the asset, right? Like, because I trade a lot of different assets. So, like, for example, I have three losses in a row just like across the board. I'm probably going to be done. Two losses on the same asset, then just kind of look at another one, go somewhere else. But yeah, like if it's just like three losses in a row to start the day, that's just going to disqualify the rest of my day probably.
Two losses on the same asset, then you're just done with that asset?
Yeah, for a bit. I'm just going to let it do what it wants to do. And I noticed like a lot of my losses would come in the first like 10 minutes of the day. So I just try to wait for the first 10 minutes of the day to kind of be completed so I can see what's going on really. It's like if you trade off the open, like, you know, like it's the biggest single volume candle of the day, right? Like everyone just like putting positions in or taking them out, whatever it may be. So it's just like erratic movement to get in pretty much right off the open.
Now, what about when you're on your winning? Like, is there a set target that you hit and you say, okay, I'm done for the day too?
Kind of. It just like kind of depends on what the market gives me and like how tired I am at that point. Like, in terms like dollar amount, not really. I kind of go for like percentage amount of the account since it's like mainly options. I'll do futures here and they're probably like one futures trade a day. But like if we're talking mainly options, I kind of look for around on average like 5 to 7% of the account a day and then scale from there.
Damn.
Nice.
You know, just growing 5-7% a day, no big deal.
Well, like, keep in mind, like, the account's not, like, a seven-figure account, right? So it could be.
Right.
It could be. Yeah. Let's stay in the account.
At that rate, it will be in, like, 45 days, Vicky.
I know, right?
But that's also, like, the drawdown, right? Like, I'd like to look for, less than 5% drawdown of the account a day. So if I'm at, like 3 or 4, then I have to wisely choose the next trade. Otherwise, I'm probably just going to close it down for the day.
Gotcha.
So you actually withdraw money at the end of every day?
Like, drawdown in the account, right? Like, the loss aspect of it.
The loss.
So it's, like, if, like, let's say the account's, like, $10,000. Okay. If you lose, like, let's say $500 for the day, then that's kind of where the limit is drawn. So you're like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to stop for the day.
And 5% is probably a little aggressive for us.
Yeah.
We should probably be sticking with 2 at max.
Yeah, like 5% is, again, a little aggressive, but I don't use that big of an account to day trade. So it's like let's say you had like a $100,000 account, like 5% on a daily basis, like after like 4 or 5 red days, you're down like a quarter of the account, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. What about you, George?
Well, for me, like lately, I have rules. Let's start with the same kind of chronological order as Vicky there to keep it consistent. Yeah. I do have absolutely rules for number of trades, but they'll scale with the volatility. So on like a June sleepy summer day, you know, I still have to come out and swing and then play the game. But I'm looking for 2 to 3 good trades. Mm-hmm. Heck, sometimes you don't even get 3 trades. With a market like we're having now in October, you know, I'm allowing myself a little bit more of a cushion, because the thing is, if you only have 2-3 trades and you miss one, then you're like, oh man, then you start to get kind of like a lack mindset, and you could get into a chase mentality. So I give myself like up to 10, you know, really good day trade opportunities, because volatility is high, more trade setups naturally form throughout the day, and really on a day like in a month like this, where it's directional to the downside, the money's quick, usually my sort of stop for the day is on the profitable side is if I start to get curious about my cash balance. That's a little psychology trick. If I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm kind of smashing this market. Let me see how much I'm at. You know, I'm starting to focus on the wrong thing here.
That's awesome. Yeah, because then if you, even if you're still up, if you throw in one losing trade, now all of a sudden it turns into a losing mentality. You feel like you lost that, even though you're still up on the day.
Exactly. And sometimes I don't want to know that, mm-hmm. right? It's like, you know that when you lose one trade after winning five, you know you gave some profit back. How much exactly? Does it really matter? Does that really change the context of the next best trade? It doesn't, right? It's like, you gave some back. All right, well, stay on the focus here of opportunity and try to get the next one, not mm-hmm. sitting there wondering about how much you lost. Who cares? Like, just go and start slapping it. You subconsciously know a rough balance, you know? But when you start to need precision and I start to get curious about, oh, how much exactly am I at? That's usually a cue. I got like one or two left right. max. That's not really a hard stop. And for me, like a month, like what's been happening in the markets in October, you know, the challenge early on in October was, and late September when things started really like dropping, it's that mentality. I've been doing this a long time and I still get that mentality. Like, all right, it's down like, you know, 0.75%. It can't keep going lower, right. can it? Mm. So it's like, right. it's that mentality of like, I just shorted this thing 10 freaking times and I'm 10 for 10, 100% win rate. The only regret I have is not shorting it bigger. And it's like, am I going to short it again, really? And yes, no, like, yes, you should. And that's the kind of the challenge I have with the transition into these down markets is that it always feels like you're a bit late on the short because it moves so much faster downside. And so earlier on when the market started dumping until I adjusted to that, okay, like I'm just selling rallies here. It's all I'm looking to do. In that transition phase, I got butchered up a little bit. Like, you know, still positive for the month, but the start wasn't great. I more than made up for it, but like that was kind of the challenge early on with this transition to the downside for me.
I think actually that might make a really good rule too, is that kind of ties into something, Dan, I think you got posted on your monitor. Structure is king. Oh,
structure is king.
Structure.
Yeah,
for sure. Imagine the chair you're sitting on right now had three legs. You wouldn't be sitting on it, right? So yeah, I love that rule.
Well, actually, it'd be more awesome, stable, man. Wouldn't it?
It
with three legs.
Well, not if it was a four-legged chair that was missing a leg.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I'm an immigrant. You know, my command of the English language sometimes is not ideal.
The idioms don't translate.
Yeah, I can barely understand you with that thick accent.
All right, I got one last rule that I want to propose, and that's stops only move up. And that's something that I've actually implemented myself, and I really like it too. If I move a stop,
wait, just for the long side,
yes,
though, right?
It only moves towards profitability. I'd say stops move towards profit.
But what if you're really, really sure that it's going to do what you think it's going to do?
Take the loss and try it again.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're that sure that the next one is going to be great, you wouldn't be in this one, right?
That's true.
Towards profitability. Okay. So we got five good rules, I think.
I think another good one that I
think it's the start of something
like,
great.
To follow, sometimes not follow, is if you take, like, if your first trade's a loser, just like chill for like 5 minutes and like really think about what you're gonna do next, because like if the first one's a loser, you're already down for the day and it just turns into like a revenge day.
Yeah,
right.
I think just taking a break, walking out, go for a quick little walk, clear your head, come exactly. back fresh.
That's a really good one. I fall into that trap sometimes. If my first trade's a loser, I start to think like a loser, you know, and it's like
it's just easy. Like you're not looking for the trade, you're looking for the revenge.
Well, it's tough for you too, George, because you exactly. can't just get up and walk away when you got a bunch of people hanging on every word you're saying on the morning calls. Like you're an entertainer.
Vic's got his calls too. Don't sell him short.
Vicky runs the options room. We kind of do the same thing, and it's like, you know, it is a challenge. There's definitely benefits to it, but it's also It's different, right? I don't know too many sports where you're like, you get to play the game, but you're also in the stands right. watching as a fan. You know what I mean? It's a very weird dynamic, but I just kind of got used to it. It is tough. You know what? It's really tough when you're having like a really crappy day and you know that, hey, if I just grind, put my head down and go out there and start hitting the market, I can make it back for right. sure. And then you get a question and it throws you off a little bit. But at the same time, I think the reason we're doing this still, Vicky and I, is there's definitely more benefits to that than drawbacks in the grand scheme of things.
Dan and I have started doing just live chatting in our Discord. And I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like when you have a bad move and then suddenly, you know, you're trying to figure out how you're going to recover from that. And then Dan's cracking jokes and trying to have fun. And I'm sitting there and I just want to seethe a little bit. Like, give me a minute here. Like, I just pissed away $200. My bad. Give me a second.
Yeah.
Let me fucking breathe.
So true. Yeah, yeah. It happens in the futures room too. You know, there's times where like I'm long and then Zalman's like, oh, I just got short.
I hear that all the time. I was wondering how you deal with that.
Yeah. I'm eating a stop and this guy's like, I told you that'd be a good level. And I'm like, yeah, well, thanks, Z. There's times I get to do it to him, but I'm more humble about it. Z just, you know, just puts that onion in the wound.
Well, he's got that New York mentality.
Yeah, that's actually mild for a New Yorker. You're right.
Well, let's start moving into kind of some of the stuff that we learned from this month. Dan, do you want to jump ahead? I mean, you're in the middle of your option or your futures observation period. Is there anything that you want to talk about? Anything you learned?
Yes.
Anything
that you? I have a few days left. I've got mm-hmm. a question for Vico, actually. So something I just started playing with this week was looking at equities charts on ranges for like the structure and the rotations. Is that something you ever do? Do you ever use like range charts for your options trading?
Range charts, as in like the futures range, like a tick chart?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
To be honest, like I don't, like even for futures, I actually switched from the range charts to more time-based.
Really?
Yeah. I do like range charts, but I find myself in two minute movements, and I kind of changed my trading style a little when I started trading options more, like with futures as well. Because like, if you'll notice in like the futures Discord, I talk about like 3 to 4 point stops usually.
Mm-hmm. I did see that.
So if I look at a tick chart, it kind of just muddles that unless it's like a larger tick chart for me. So I just rather use the time chart if I'm going to use a larger tick chart anyways. Mm-hmm. I just like the time charts more for stocks especially. I think like tick charts are okay, but I don't know. It mainly just depends on me like what like the volume and like the like order flow and the time and sales kind of do more so than what like a certain time or a certain tick is doing. You know what I mean? Like I can get the levels from any chart, but yeah. Then like... It won't really tell me if it's going to continue the movement through, like regardless of what kind of chart it is.
Well, and then the other thing that I came across this week that I'm glad I get a chance to ask about is George, do you ever use any longer range tick charts?
Yeah, like I'm the kind of the opposite on Vicky on this, which is fine. Yeah. Like we all, mm-hmm. This is the great thing about trading. We all get to find what works with us or for us, and you know, refine our strategy. And you know, Vicky's like taking a longer term approach to trading where, you know, you do need a 3 to 4 point stop. You're not, if you're holding for a couple hours, you know, like doing longer term day trades, you know, it'd be nuts to use like 4 or 5, 6 ticks. But yeah, for me, like I like the tick chart because I'm still more like purely day trader. I don't day trade as much into stocks and options these days. I'm mostly predominantly focused on futures.
Right.
At the time, like at the moment, it's all I really got time for. I barely even have time for that weird, you know, transition point in my life last year. But yeah, like I use a larger tick chart, but I see the value of like using these type of charts for rotations to scale in. Like when you get a nice level and when you look at a candle that's time-based, it's usually dancing around that level, right? It's like you don't really know where it's going to be until the candle closes. So at one point it could be above your level, another point would be below the level, another point back above. So it's kind of like, yeah, you know, that's to me like some of the noise that you mm-hmm. introduce with time charts, and the ticks just show me clean rotations. And you know, this works mostly in futures markets. You know, I haven't day traded stocks with tick charts, but in futures markets, especially the ES, because it's such a rotational market with double-sided flow almost at all times, that if you're going to scale in, I love the tick because it shows you a level that it's pinned against. It'll just rotate up, back down, rotate up, back down. And that's an accumulation phase for the next move. And I use that information to scale in. Like these days, mm-hmm. I'm also holding a little bit longer with a lot of this volatility in the market. but I'm using these ticks to kind of build a position with each rotation for the continuation down. So that's why I use them. You know, I trade futures. My holding time is probably, you know, I don't know what Vicky's is, but probably like a fifth of his. And that minute, you know, precise detail helps me build a decent sized trade with the risk of a one lot, basically.
Yeah, I usually like hold even futures for like probably, well, it kind of depends on how fast the move is, but like probably like at least 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, my average positions, like I check for this month, like 3 minutes. That's average, right? That's like the ones that I scratch within like 2 seconds. That kind of kills your average when you scratch a 10 lot in 2 seconds.
Do you ever pull up like a 40 tick chart?
The one that I really like using, Dan, and this is again predominantly for futures for the listener, just to understand, like, you know, this is a future specific, you know, value I'm going to give you. Don't just take it and start to like build your whole trading plan around it. But I like a 6 tick because it's a 0.5 rotation. That's kind of my, you know, 4 to 6 ticks is the smaller rotations. But I really like a 12 and 24 tick is usually as high up as I'll go. Now, a guy like Zalman uses the 60 tick chart and he loves that for confirmation. He'll say, hey, like the 60 tick chart now closed. We got a reversal. I'm like, yeah, I'm long 6 points ago. You know? But it's like, yeah, it's good. Get on board. I need some buyers to take me higher. But I like the 24 tick for levels. And, you know, that's one thing that one of our members in the futures room introduced was those volume profiles on each 24 tick bar. Vicky, you remember that, right? What Chris showed us. Yeah, that to me, like to this day, is foundational. I love that for levels because you see order flow on a larger term, but it's still rotational. It's kind of like the midway point between a time chart and then like a rotational chart. And for that, like intraday order flow levels, to me, like that's my secret sauce. It's not that secret because I just said it on a podcast, but I love that chart.
That's interesting. How come that's not in the lessons? I feel like you're holding out.
No, I'm just kidding. It should be the 20. Well, that's why it's not. That's the Diamond Edge Plus one. Kyle, jeez.
Kyle, you didn't watch that video? Oh, man, you didn't even finish the course, did you?
I haven't finished the course because he keeps throwing in three-week challenges that I got to abide by.
And shameless plug here, like I think that's the benefit of what we do at Trade Pro here is when, you know, the options market changes every day, all markets change every day. And so Victorio is constantly updating the options education. Like he's always putting out great videos and like putting in new, like, you know, addendums, if you will. The futures course is a year old, probably a year and a half. And it's old, right? We're redoing it. And so some of that will be introduced in that stage. Like we're taking a different approach. It's going to be more application based. We're not going to delete the old one. You'll always have access to it. But the idea is let's make it more application focused. And the work is going through. I'm on lesson 6 at the moment of the design of it. So yeah, that part's going to be introduced. You know, education these days needs to change super quick and get refreshed. If you're trading with a course that talks about, you know, the head and shoulders from the 90s. You definitely got to update your skills and tools. So yeah, that's something we'll definitely be introducing, Kyle, in a more structured way with the 24 tick. We're going to do more of a top-down approach every single day. Like we do in the trading room, you know, you're there a fair bit. So just go high level, find the levels there, and then drill down a little bit more. And the second last chart we'll look at is the 24 tick at that point.
So now both of you trade in a Trade Pro account, right?
What do you mean?
Am I correct? Like there's the company itself has an account that you both make trades in?
No. No.
How do you keep score? How do you know who's better?
We really don't, do we, Vicky? We really don't. Like Vicky and I use each other for, well, not like use. We got a good relationship. I see Victoria as a friend first, and then, you know, somebody I'm lucky and happy to work with. So, you know, him and I just like more use each other as a support when we're having kind of crappy days, like, hey man, what the hell's going on? And we'll just give each other a pep talk. But you know, it's not really a competition. I trade personally on the Trade Pro account for, you know, tax benefits for the corporation, etc. And then Victorio, he does manage an account for us, but it's a little more long term focused and his day trading is kind of on his own. That's one of the big benefits of being a trader or Trade Pro is like, you know, you go in the room, You make money while you make money.
Right. Yeah. Making your own money while you're teaching everyone else.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to fill out all those newsletters and yeah. entertain everyone on the Discord. You got to go on these podcasts.
Exactly. But I mean, there is drawbacks, right? Who knows? Maybe Vicky could be crushing it even more.
You got to tweet all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would think Vicky enjoys that stuff, though. I don't know. I think you have to enjoy that stuff to do it the way he does, because he does quality. He puts out, you know, like, I don't know. Vicky, am I wrong?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I like the research aspect mainly. Like, that's probably my favorite part. Like, I do that regardless.
So how do you find new stocks to look at? Like, how does something catch your eye? Do you have certain screeners that you like to look at? Because that's something I always struggle with, is trying. I always want something new, but I like it when people bring it to me, because then I don't have to search.
That's a good question. That's a good question. I do like kind of like old school style, but I also like look at news that comes out. Like, there's like news services out there that kind of cover stocks. You kind of still have to dig around for that. There's just like a lot of people on Twitter actually just post like things that get upgraded or downgraded in the mornings. What was that guy's name? Mm-hmm. Like Delta One. Or whatever his handle was. He's literally like news, except you don't have to like find a news service. Like he just kind of copy pastes like from other news services. So that's like a good follow, I'd say. And I kind of just like look at what, I like to look at what's been like upgraded or downgraded pre-market. What has like specific news, like Palantir, for example, got like a $800 billion deal with the army. Or I forget the exact sum of money, but it's somewhere around there, right after the market closed. And it's up like 15% after hours now. So like something like that, for example. Yeah, see, you gotta follow him.
Well, I was out fishing is what the problem was.
You're not following Delta One?
Shit, look at that. Well, I'm still supposed to observe, but...
Can I mention one thing here? Because I think if somebody's listening, it's like when you guys are talking about this, like how'd you find a stock? I think like people are under the impression that there's this like magical way that it just like pops on your desk. Like, I'm going to buy this one. And like if you were to ask Victorio, and I will ask him right now, Vicky, how many hours a day would you say you research? Like, do you research more than you trade in terms of time?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like there's a, like at a certain point, you kind of develop like a super big watch list and you get better at like identifying what's like what could be a hype play based on like some of that news or like what the setup kind of looks like. But like at the beginning, especially, like you're going to be looking at like different stocks for like hours. Like I've got a list of like 200 to 250 probably stocks that I don't go through every day, but like once a week I'll go through them and see what could be setting up throughout the week, you know, and like put that in front of me. So like, for example, if I watch, let's say 20 stocks throughout the week that are like high probability stocks that could have a move, then at least like a few of those is going to have a really good move, right? But yeah, like finding, I think just like at the beginning, like finding whatever's like hyped up based on like some kind of news is usually the way to go. Like yesterday, Facebook, for example, Facebook got like absolutely destroyed, right? And
yeah,
it was just like, I don't know, like personally, I thought it was just all over baked. Like it didn't, like it was, it's...
Right. Oh my God, they're out. Something on the internet is down. What? That never happens.
Yeah. And like,
I know. Yeah.
And like people were posting all this like stuff, like, oh, like the website's up for sale, blah, blah. I'm like, come on, it's Facebook. Like, I don't. Yeah.
And Jack from Twitter said, how much?
Like, how much? Just... Like, how much could it, like,
love it. Right.
You know, like in one day, like the whole thing to be just dead. Like, that just seemed like a little, like, ridiculous.
We walked away. We called it. We're done.
Like, this is, it's overbaked. So, like, at the end of the day, like, in our trading room on Discord, I said, I'm getting long Facebook, Apple, and Twitter. Like, 10 minutes off the close. Like, these are the calls that I'm going to buy. Like, there's, like, an 80% chance it's going up. There's a lot of order flow coming in on this. Like, I don't think these things are dead. Especially Twitter. That was, like, that one just made the most sense, logically. And today, we wake up, and it's already up, like, 40%.
God, I love it when a swing trade is done in 3 hours.
Like, I think the Facebook situation yesterday was kind of, it was overdone too, because like the rumor mill started to circulate really quickly. Like, I think we're in a really tough time, like with, you know, a lot of division in society. right? Over, you know, over COVID, over the way certain things are being handled. And I think people took this outage and freaked out. They're like, you know, the conspiracy theories started flowing through, like, oh, this is it. The internet's done. You know, there's been internet outages and kill switches in other countries, and they've admitted it. Like, we're just killing the internet. It's like, is this happening in the US? People panic. They start selling while they still got internet. Other people are saying, like, you got a whistleblower testifying tomorrow. What a coincidence that Facebook is now down for 6 hours. It's like, everyone's just going freaking nuts. And the real traders, and, like, you know, and here's Vicky 10 minutes before the close loading up on the calls. I think that was, you know, I would have done the same thing. And actually, in fact, I did consider it, and I logged into IB, and I was like, ah.
Even if you didn't think that way and you understood, like, what was going on in the order flow front, right? Like, someone was buying, like, millions and millions of dollars of Facebook yesterday into the close. It's like, maybe Zuckerberg. It doesn't matter. It's going to make the price go up, right? Like, whoever wants to buy it, buy it. So it's like understanding that and seeing, like, expected price of Facebook into November and December, like what they're expecting it to be, right? That doesn't have to happen, but it's going to happen for one day, right? Like tomorrow or yesterday, I was thinking, well, today it's probably going to have a decent move to the upside based on all this.
Right.
Like it was worth a shot based on seeing, like, how many people were buying it, you know? And isn't it funny how every year around September and October, like, something just explodes and just, like, kills the market? Like, this seems a little too coincidental. Last year, SoftBank got this huge margin, or no, was it a margin call?
Well, was that the one that took out the, like, Viacom and Discovery and all that?
Wasn't SoftBank. Bill Huang, he was short in the queues and the thing just destroyed his portfolio.
Was it that long ago?
Wow. The thing rocking it.
Yeah, man. It was last... every year, September and October, someone does some stupid shit and just destroys the market, you know? What are the odds of that?
What are you blaming this year on, then?
Well, this year, Evergrande starts the whole fiasco, and then you've got this debt ceiling, you've got everything that's just piling together, Facebook, whistleblowers, selling the website domain, like, what? How? It seems like it.
I think some of this is self-fulfilling too, though, right? Because everybody just is on the bid all the way up until September, and suddenly September, everybody just gets a little bit nervous and anxious that's been trading more than a year, that sees this happen every single year almost without fail, and they're like, I don't want to really buy it right now. And then when people aren't buying and this trend isn't continuing, that's when the margin calls start to come out and these companies get exposed, because they're like, crap, I kind of need some more people to bid me up here.
they're buying 4,500 on the S&P, and it goes to 4,505.
Is it?
It's interesting, though. Every time this year, though, this is when I always do the long VIX play here. Not long Vicky, but VIX,
Well, like you said, the self-fulfilling prophecy, it seems like a lot of things work because so many people use it.
Yeah, it's like seasonality over the past 20 years is expecting September to be negative, right? What typically happens, September is negative. But there's also another factor in this. Like, I was recently shown the typical holding period for different indices and obviously the stocks within them. And seasonally... fund managers, you know how they cycle, they rebalance, right? I don't know where this is. But while I find it, let me off the top of my head tell you guys. So typically what we see is, you want me to make it up?
Yeah,
that's a trade pro way. Let me just make everything up. Everything is 100% guaranteed. No, that's not true. So It's about like equities typically have like a holding period between around October to November is like the start. That's a typical start, especially for tech. The typical start for tech is I think the end of this week. That's when the accumulation starts to happen. And like it's just, this is based on like statistics, obviously. There's no like what's it called? There's no like argument or like guarantee behind that, just statistics, right? Like the majority of the time this would happen, right? It's not 100%, but anyways, around the end of early October 8th, the Nasdaq, so like the big tech sector, starts to get bought up. And like what happened last year around that time, that's when, if you watch like options order flow, because that does dictate what market makers use to hedge, right? they're buying Apple, Facebook, like the big FANG names, and they're buying like smaller tech around them. But those are the main components of the NASDAQ, right? It's about like 35% of the whole NASDAQ. And at that point, like not that exact date, but around the second week of October is when that buying started to accumulate, right? And it continued into the end of the year. Now, the buying on the S&P 500, for example, it starts to accumulate closer to November, right? That's why tech starts to typically outperform in the fall and then the rest of the market in the winter. So the tech accumulation lasts until about May, and then the S&P accumulation kind of lasts from like November until, I think, May again. So that's when you start to see big funds actually start accumulating and rebalancing out of whatever they may have rebalanced into, right? For example, energy this time around and like commodities. And they start cycling out of that and start cycling into like the actual equity market.
I was going to say, so that means that people are going to buy the dip here soon? Is that what you're saying? Thank God.
I have an explanation. Sorry.
Pretty much, yeah. Right, like it's like, I don't know when, and it's not going to be on everything, but it's going to be on the big names that you all know, right? It's going to be on your Facebooks, your Apples, your Microsofts to begin with, and then it's going to trickle into other things.
Sorry, George, what were you about to say or ask?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I have a logical explanation for this. Now, you guys are going to laugh. It's going to sound like a joke, but like, think about just human psychology. So you have a really good year, right? And then you hit the summer months and you go on a nice big vacation with your family. Because then they, traders, asset managers, they're all just humans. I've seen some of them on my trips, you know, like they party harder than most of us. So, you know, they go in and have this big friggin' vacation, go with their family, and then they come home and they're like, I got to pay for this. And if you really actually look at it, this is how the September sell-off kind of happens. September is a crappy month. You know, it's like you need some retail therapy. You know, summer's over. Vacation isn't paid for yet. You got to sell some to start, you know, paying off some of these balances. Prepping for cash flow for Christmas, that's coming up. And I think like this is explained by human sentiment. And I've actually thought about this for years. Like there's got to be a simple explanation for this thing. And that's what I've kind of come down to.
I wouldn't argue against it.
Is it statistical like Vicky's and, you know, non-arguable? No, everything I say is open for argument, but that's by design.
I have opened it if you want the actual numbers.
Yeah, what are they? I'm actually curious.
Typically what we see is like, so the S&P 500 starts to accumulate on October 28th, right? Obviously, they don't take October 28th as the final date to start buying the dip, but like around that time, like the end of October, let's call it, into the beginning of May, right? That's the typical holding period for the S&P. Russell, which is the small cap, is at the end of November until the beginning of March. And if you take a look at the Russell chart, it's been in limbo for quite some time, right?
Mm-hmm.
The NASDAQ is between October 9th. So the first to second week of October, they do start accumulating big tech. And then into the end of February and then start middle of April to middle of July again. So there's two main holding periods that they list here for tech companies. Emerging markets, end of November until mid April, and then volatility index, beginning of July until the end of this month, October. And then treasury bonds, right? It's going to be the time between equities. So the beginning of May until mid-October.
So basically close your eyes and buy everything right now.
It's kind of what it sounds like. We're kind of stepping a little bit away from reviewing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to bring us back a little bit to that because I do actually want to take a minute. I do want to take a minute to kind of talk about some of the stuff that we learned this past month.
You want to keep reviewing?
And we kind of alluded to what I was going through this week. And I figure I might as well share since George was kind enough to share so much the last time he was on.
Yeah.
Also, his latest podcast was amazing, by the way. The talking about your experience with the gambling addiction, that was fantastic.
Yeah, that's a very important topic. Thank you.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, no. I listened to it. It was very worthwhile, and I plan on listening again. In fact, anytime I catch myself with my gambler hat on, I'm gonna pull that up and give it a listen.
To some extent, and it's not a snarky comment, Dan, but I did actually think of you during that episode with our conversation from before. And, you know, it's a natural tendency, I think, Kyle's right. Like, there's got to be some level of of, you know, gambling, you could cope with it. Some people have lower levels of it, other people higher levels. And, you know, since we dropped that podcast, a lot of people reached out and said, like, hey man, thanks for talking about this. I'm like a recovering gambling addict and in the markets, and I still believe that I've overcome this, blah blah. But it's a big issue for a lot of people.
I told Dan that when you said that you made that episode thinking of him, I said, I must be better at hiding my gambling tendencies.
Oh, yeah.
You have rules, so it doesn't sound like you gamble, but...
Oh, I do. Not. Goddamn, I forgot where I was going with that. Oh, I want to talk about what I learned this week. So I ended up having to put myself in timeout because I was trying to trade with too many distractions. And it's funny like how quickly you can take yourself out of the right headspace that you need to be in. If I'm trying to figure out how to say this the best way, like I was not on top of my game. I had too many distractions around the house, but I was still trying to trade through it and it was not working. So yeah, I decided to put myself in timeout for the rest of the week to try to protect my capital, give myself a chance to enjoy the company that we have here without having to worry about, you know, the financial side of it. But that's like, how do you deal with distractions? How do you guys deal with that? Like, do you guys have any of the similar issues? Do you have any ways that you cope
while you're trying to run a live trade room and do your trading? Right,
yeah.
How do you cope with all of those distractions?
I think maybe I could speak on this briefly. I have many, I don't want to call it a distraction because it's, let's just say, mm-hmm. changes in my life that I'm still trying to work through. Like I think I've mastered the balance of trading while talking about it. We've been doing it for a long time, both Vicky and I. So it's like with time, everything sort of seems to find its consistent phase, you know, it's normality. But one aspect of my life is like, you know, being a father and stuff, you know, man, it's been tough. It's been tough. Sometimes like I'm guilty. Sometimes I feel guilt when I work because it's like, I should be hanging out with my son, Isaiah. When I hang out with him, sometimes I'm like, ah, damn it. I feel guilty for not doing like trading and putting out 100 market research reports. So, you know, like for the distractions and how I sort of deal with it is I've sort of started to block off time. Like this is trading time. This is, you know, working time, etc. But while I'm mm-hmm. trading, you know, I just, for me, like to remove the distractions, I just create an environment that doesn't support them at all. Like if you actually look at my trading desk, I'm surrounded literally in a box by monitors. So there's not really much space to put anything here on this desk. I have one little tip that's helped me a lot is I used to be a chronic alt tabber, and I'm not really kidding. Like I had a keyboard that is still in the office, an old one where the alt and tab were like very faint. They almost like wore off. So what I've done is actually on Windows, I've created two separate, this is a game changer for me. I created two separate desktops. One of them is I call productivity. So I do everything outside of trading. And the other one's trading. So when I flip through with my desktop keys and I'm looking at the trading one, there's literally nothing to distract me there. No messengers, no, you know, no WhatsApps, nothing. All I'm looking at is markets. And that's helped a lot because I'm easily distracted. Ask Vicky.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am like the hurricane in the office that prevents people from working. I'm like, hey, Vicky, what are you doing? What did you do this weekend? Just shaking his chair, throwing things at him, and he's just like not phased, which just makes me want to do it more.
I can see it. Yeah, Vicky seems like the trading robot to me, the Terminator of options.
Oh, 100%.
And then George standing next to him with his finger right in front of his nose. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you.
You can't read, Victorio.
He just walks in, whether it's options, equities, futures. He just walks in, makes some money, walks out. Yeah. No big deal.
You don't know if yesterday, when he shows up to work for every day for trading, you don't know if yesterday he lost his whole account or if he hooked up with Beyonce. Like either one of the two.
Right.
He just walks in and you don't know. And then there's this understanding where you don't ask until the trading day is over.
So what's your secret, Vico? How do you keep your head in the game?
I think I have like internal distractions more so where it's just like thinking of like too many things at the same time, which kind of like deviates sometimes. But like, I don't know. I feel like it's like more of like a job. So you kind of have to do it and you can't get distracted. So I don't really... It's hard. I think it's just like personality wise. Like I don't really have like a distractive personality.
You don't struggle with it.
No, not really. And I have to look at like I have to look at like a lot of things at the same time. So it's like perfect when trading. And that's kind of what keeps me not distracted, because like I can just look at different stocks or like futures or something.
Can I make an observation, Vicky, with your permission here?
Yeah, what's up?
I know they asked you, but like from my experience, you just keep yourself busy. Like,
yeah,
Vicky doesn't have any free time at all. This guy just always banging out something different. And I think that's also important, right? Like it's part of staying focused. Especially for distracted people, just staying busy, you know, having the discipline to treat it like a job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not in here trading with the illusion that we're getting lucky. Like, you know, we trust our system, we have a strategy, and we just repeat things. When you make everything like repeatable, actionable, it becomes harder to be distracted, you know? It requires focus.
Yeah, actually, that kind of leads in a little bit towards routine, because I think I've heard you talk a lot about routine being key, having a good solid routine, not just waking up and then flipping the computer on and then trying to enter a trade in. Like, what are your guys' routines?
Well, like, what? So, like, the main thing that I actually struggled with when I came back from vacation was like, I wasn't in a routine anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been like harder to get back into it because like I was gone for like a month. So I didn't really trade too much throughout that month. And like without the routine, you kind of forget how to trade, to be honest. Like I was just like doing things that like obviously weren't what I normally do. And like it was just like kind of hard. So like without that routine, it becomes like that much harder. Like, so if you go away for a bit, you're not trading for a bit. Yeah, you might think that's great because like you're giving yourself some time off. But like at the same time, you can't just like come in and start doing what you did before. Like expecting the same results.
Right.
So like that routine is like super important. Like I wake up pretty early. I just have like terrible sleep. So like, I guess that's another plus or minus. Depends on how you look at it. I just like, I never sleep. Like I don't sleep. So I look at the markets like pretty much throughout the night too.
Insomnia.
I noticed you were tweeting about futures at like 11 o'clock the other night. Is he trading futures right now?
Even if I'm not tweeting or talking about it, like I wake up a lot throughout the night. So like I'll be up at like 2, 3, 4, 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And just like kind of looking at the markets. But like when I wake up, I'm not really tired. I kind of just like do my thing, like go, like the first thing I do is actually like open like a chart like in the mornings and like see what happened overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of just like grab like a tea or something, or like something to drink, like a water, and just like even like some meditation in the morning, some light, just like centering my brain, and then just straight into the charts, to be honest. Like the more time I get in front of the charts before the market opens, the better for me.
Hmm.
I don't know about other people, but like I kind of always just want to know like what the potential move could be.
Right.
It sounds like TradePro needs a health and wellness program.
It kind of does. It's kind of,
what are we doing?
I got to tell you, he actually made me afraid to take a vacation if I finally learn this thing, and then I'm going to forget it all as soon as I go.
No, don't you like dare think about enjoying yourself.
Yeah, well, we don't know how much drinking he did on vacation, for the record.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I think I
can smell it from there.
I heard he wore out the shot glass or something.
It's just a clear shot
glass. It's just
now.
A clear glass now.
He does a lot of drinking when he's not on vacation. Yeah, exactly. I can only imagine. I missed out.
Yeah.
He's drinking right now. Anymore.
I'm doing a quote unquote sober October. You know what that means?
Oh yeah, I listened to Joe Rogan.
So people told, like, because I had a few drinks like on the weekend, and they're like, "That's not sober October." And I said, "Well, did I get drunk?" No.
That's true. You're sober.
Did I drink? Yes. So technically, like, it's still sober October.
Sober October.
Oh, yeah. If you didn't get drunk, I'd say that counts.
Or just get drunk and lie to yourself. That works too.
At that point, we've got bigger problems.
I got to ask this for a friend. What are some good strategies for trading while you're either drinking or smoking a bunch of weed?
Don't do it.
Damn it.
Sorry, Dan.
I've done it before. Like, I haven't traded, but like I've bought in a sizable position, just like our buddy from the UK, under the influence, waking up to a lot of shares of something. And it was a good purchase, but like it wasn't the best of purchases.
Hey, you know what though? It works for some people. I do know traders who actually do smoke weed like before they trade, and they swear by it. Like one of our most successful members, Riker Savage, we did a podcast with him. He admits it, you know, that's part of his protocol and how he stays focused. I think it just like depends on who you are, right? And going back to the routine questions, You know, I think everyone's different, but I think before you don't have a routine, I think you should try having one first, because you're more likely somebody who needs a routine. Human beings are routine creatures. Like, we interviewed a guy on our podcast, Orderflow Leo from Orderflow Labs. That guy's, you know, an amazing trader. He's doing great work for the industry. And I asked him, like, hey, Leo, what's your routine? I'm just curious. He's like, wait, what do you mean I hit the power button on the computer? And that's his morning routine. And you know what? It works for him. But like, for me, I can't. I got to start out well before I trade. If I just sit down and trade, I'll do horrible. I need to be awake. And for me, I kind of have a hard time being fully awake. I have like a window in the morning where, you know, I have 2 to 3 hours of focus of being completely awake. And then I kind of drift off. I don't eat anything. No breakfast. You know, nothing. Just water in the morning. A little bit of coffee. Not too much of it. And then just like stay hungry. I think my mentality is just stay hungry before you start trading.
Psychologically trick yourself into thinking you're getting your next meal.
Yeah, man. All the great things around us that have been created have, you know, been done for people who are hungry. Like both metaphorically and you know, quite literally.
And literally agriculture, farming.
I think physical health is like a good thing too, like in terms of like trading, like he said, I don't eat anything for like a long time, and like it's not like out of starvation. It just like keeps it just like there's a lot of studies done about like intermittent fasting, how they actually do help you think better, rather than like being hungry and like being hangry. Yeah, it might be shit for the first few days, but like if you kind of acclimatize and make it a part of your routine, it's just like clearer thinking the way I see it. Because like, or you have to eat like very light, like certain foods, because like there's a lot of foods that like make you tired or like make you groggy and kind of like affect the way you think. So it's like if you don't have anything in your stomach, like in the first like 2-3 hours of the day, it does help you clear your mind a lot better with like water, or like some kind of tea. I think that's like, I guess I could attribute that to routine.
Yeah, I do the same thing, Vicky. Like, I don't eat. I intermittent fast, like, by nature. I find it works best for my body. I've tried a lot of different things. And, like, you just stay sharp. You stay focused. And, you know, one other thing that I've incorporated is that exercise. Like, I've actually built a home gym for myself because I can't go to gyms anymore, number one. And, you know, through the pandemic, I couldn't. I gained a lot of weight. I had to do something about it. So I kind of built a home gym and then have a personal trainer. So I'll actually wake up at, like, 5:30. Two nights of the week. Two mornings of the week, and I'm at the gym at 6 a.m. and every single morning, Kyle, I make that exact same sound when I show up. I literally, my trainer's like, hey man, what's up? I'm like,
fuck you.
And then by like, that's
the way I greet my wife every morning.
Yeah, by 7 a.m.
Surprised you still have one.
Yeah, but by 7 a.m. when the workout's done and the blood's flowing, I'm like, I don't know what, you know, opioids are like, but I feel like it's nature's crack. I'm just like wired, and I come home and everything makes sense. I find the levels quicker. You know, I have the next best trades. I do such good fast work that the rest of my routine only needs to be 30 minutes. I go through the level. Now, granted, I've been a little absent from Discord, so it's not a good thing. I should probably increase that time, but within 30 minutes, I get the levels, get ready for the morning market update, do everything, bam, bam, bam. It's just like, it makes everything so much easier when you start off with that, like, you know, intense activity, and then you just don't eat. You just smack it. You're hungry. You're ready to go. Fired up.
I think the one thing is like about like routine is like once you find a routine that like works for you well, and you notice like that you're actually improving trading, like you'll never go back from that. Yeah. And you'll kind of always like think of that routine as like kind of the cornerstone of you doing like well. So it becomes like, you know how some people have like pre-game like rituals, like something like that.
Right.
Becomes like something of that sort. And like I think like trade review is like an important aspect of it too. The easiest way to find something that works for you is finding something that works based on like a specific like volume pattern or like something of the sort, right? Like some kind of specific setup that comes up, and like finding something like that. So like if you review your trades and you notice, oh, okay, like I'm really good at breakouts, right? And then you find it deeper, okay, I'm really good at this breakout, okay, like I'm really good when this breakout happens with like this kind of volume, I'm really good with the with like this volume, this breakout, and like this kind of order flow. And then all of a sudden like you've developed this plan that becomes out of your, that becomes a routine out of you reviewing your trades and like seeing what you're good and bad at. And then that's the only trade that you take all of a sudden, right?
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah, for sure. I think the most important part is, like Vicky said, find something that works for you. try things and don't be afraid to fail, because if you know what doesn't work, you're actually closer to knowing what does. You know, I just about everything in my life, I failed my way into success. I don't think I've ever picked up anything and was good at it until I had worked for it. You know what I mean? So routine's the same thing. I'm sure you guys will agree. If you're off your routine, the first thing you're thinking about is, oh my God, how can I make up to feel like I'm there again? Once you create a routine, you're like, if you're behind, how do I get on track ASAP? But then there comes a point where you're like, ah, crap, I'm not going to be able to do everything in a morning routine. What should I skip? I think that's when the day starts to turn to a disaster for your trading too. There's direct correlation between how much of my routine I complete and how well I do trading. And for some reason, I still believe if I don't finish my routine that I could do this. This is going to be different this time. Yeah, and then 11:30, I ping Victorio. How'd you do today? Oh, man, I had a terrible...
All right, well, we're starting to run a little long. Should we wrap this thing up?
Yeah, put a bow on it. Any closing thoughts you guys like to share?
Yeah, I got closing thoughts. I think that, you know, I want to thank you guys for having us on, obviously. And for Vicky also for putting his energy to Trade Pro and what we do. And, you know, I think the market needs, it's a hard job to be both a trader and to kind of try to teach and give back to other people. But I think that the better that we do in life, I think it becomes a responsibility to give back. You know, I know a lot of people are baffled. Like if you're doing decent trading, you know, why would you want to go in there and also teach the thing? But it's a responsibility to do it. So that's what we do at Trade Pro Academy. We got like an honest community and, you know, I love what we do. But in closing thoughts, I don't really have anything other than, you know, thank you guys for having us back. You know, Vicky and I are honored and obviously let him speak for himself. But we love doing this stuff. We love being on the podcast and look forward to doing another review next month with you guys or the one after.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. Perfect. Always a pleasure with you guys. I feel like I've been on this podcast a lot now. I feel like I'm going to be a co-host soon.
Almost. Let's see four bowls in the China shop.
And remember, Vicky says buy everything tomorrow morning.
Yeah, exactly. But no. That's not what I said.
No, seriously, the pleasure is all ours, gentlemen. It's so great. We're so glad to have you on the show. We've both learned so much from you, and believe you me, you get our firm recommendation all the time. Nothing better.
We appreciate that, honestly. Really do. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it, folks. Another exciting month-end review. Stay tuned for that hot stuff interview. We'll work out the details for that. And then until next time, happy trades.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Thanks for having us again. Ciao.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.